Hi everyone. Today's episode is with a good friend of mine and my colleague from the beautiful country of Brazil, who is also a breast cancer survivor. Please welcome Joneja.
I want to thank you for agreeing to sharing your story. And when I saw your post, I said, let me ask her if she wants to do it. And to be honest, I expected to hear no. I didn't think that you will be willing to share the story. And every month of October is probably big for you. And you have a big reason for this.
Yes, that's true. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. Yes, I'm very glad to be here and to share my story.
Absolutely. Well, you have two reasons to be on the podcast. Because of the month of October, it's a big month for breast cancer awareness. And the second reason is your immigration story, because you are coming from a different country too. So you have two reasons.
Yes.
And whichever you would like to start first, it's up to you. You get to choose.
Well, no, you choose. You start.
Well, let's reflect and came back to the day when maybe 2 years ago you shared this story that I had no idea. And it was just a conversation in our office. And you said, by the way, I'm a breast cancer survivor. And to be honest, I didn't expect to hear anything like this. People who survive major illnesses, I have a lot of respect in people like you. And I think it takes a lot. And it's not just physical strength. This is mental strength.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So for the first time, when you think back, I don't know how many years ago, you heard the diagnosis. Was it in the United States or it was in your country?
It was in the United States. It was, I can remember clearly, it was not on the doctor's office.
Really?
I was driving, and then they called me, and I said, "Well, I have the results of your biopsy," and I said, "Okay, let me park my car." So I parked in a building, and there they told me that I had breast cancer, and every time I pass by this building, I remember that day when I got the news.
So this is a landmark for you.
Oh, yes. Yes, in 2014.
And how did it all start? Did you do a self-check or it was bothering you? How did it start?
Well, in 2014, I was trying to get pregnant, and I was doing IUI. I just started doing IUI, intrauterine. And now I forgot the name. Okay.
Injections.
Yes. So that week I was. I was trying to get pregnant, and then my sister, I have a sister, she's 11 years older than me. She's my half-sister, but she's kind of my mom, because when I was born, she was 11 years old. She was the one who would take care of me, feed me, change me. My mom was working all the time, so I'm her little baby. So she's responsible for bringing me here to the United States. And in May, she was dressing to go to work, and she felt a lump on her breast. And then by the time she was 51 years old, and she had never had a mammogram, 51 years old. So she went to the doctor and she was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer.
Very advanced.
Very advanced, yes.
And just to mention, and you know it because you interpret so many encounters as a healthcare professional, you know that in this country, they recommend the screening starting 40 when
40.
40.
Yes. So I was 40 in 2014. So I asked her, my sister, but you never saw this before? She said, oh, I never did a breast cancer, like a mammogram before. And I was surprised because my sister, well, she knows a lot. So, but I was like, why you didn't go to, you know, to check this, you know, 51 years old. So yes, then my husband started, you know, talking to me. You need to do a mammogram. You need to do a mammogram. Actually, I didn't want to go because I was trying to get pregnant. And in my mind, I was saying, if I have cancer, then I will have to stop my treatment for pregnancy. But my husband was now telling me all the time. I went to my doctor, to my primary doctor, and I told her about my sister. And she said, oh no, but you're too young. But I was 40. And my doctor thought, no, you're still young. But since you have a sister that has breast cancer, I'm gonna order one for you, one mammogram. So I did the mammogram. And right there, I was in the Northwestern Hospital in downtown. And they saw something. And they said, well, you need to come back for a biopsy. And I said, okay. So they scheduled on the next day. And when I was leaving the hospital, I was walking to the parking lot. I got a call from the people, the hospital, and say, wow, we have an opening here. I think it was like 1:30 p.m. It was morning. Would you like to wait and do your biopsy right now today? I'm like, yes. So I went back. But I was kind of shaky.
Sure.
I was kind of nervous. I didn't want to call my husband. I just called a friend of mine. By this time, my sister was already going through chemo. So I didn't want to, you know, tell her anything until I had, you know, I was sure of about the results. So I did the biopsy and I took a picture and I sent to my husband and he was like, what is going on? He was very surprised. Yes. So like a week later, I think they called me and they said that it was a cancer, but it was in a very early stage. It was in my, you know, the milk duct, and it was non-invasive. So she said, well, I need to, you know, to talk to you. I'm going to schedule an appointment with the doctor, with the surgeon, you know. And by this time, I was just like thinking about pregnancy. My treatment, because I was going to do my second IUI that week. After 5 minutes, my OB called me because the hospital called him. And he said, well, we need to stop the treatment and then you go treat your cancer. This was in July, end of July. So I told my mom that I had a biopsy, but my mom was coming to take care of my sister because she was going to do the surgery. And I just told my mom when I pick her up in the airport. But as soon as I told her, I was like, don't worry, it's now in the beginning, everything's gonna be fine. But one thing that I noticed is that when I got the news from my sister, I didn't cry. I wanted to cry because of her, but I wanted to be strong for her. So I was being strong for her. And when I got the news, I didn't cry either.
For yourself?
For myself, no.
But so, how did you feel when you're saying all this? I get the vibe that you were very strong even when you told mom when she actually got here. So you were able to keep that news for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What, how? I mean, I don't.
Yes.
But,
yeah, it was, luckily my mom didn't take long to come.
Okay.
But I was just now, just my husband and I, we knew. And I was trying to get everything prepared. So, I don't know. I just, it looks like it was not happening. It was something that for me was not happening. Like, no, this is not real, you know.
Okay, that gave you peace of mind. You believe that this is early stage and this is treatable and this is.
Yes, no, this is not real and that's it. So, when I took my mom to my sister's house and I was going to tell her about the cancer, but before I called my brother-in-law and I told him and I said, I want to know if my sister's okay. And he said, okay. It says, it's okay. And he said, he asked me, do you want me to tell her? I'm like, no, no problem. I will tell her. 5 minutes later, he called me and I said, oh man, he told her already. And he called, yeah, I couldn't keep. I told her. So I said, okay, no problem. I'm going there. So when I got to my sister's house, she was in the bed. She had chemo that week. She was very, very weak there. But she was so, you know, like, surprised, like, what's going on? And she even said, I know you want to support me, but not this way. but I was calm, actually, for myself. And I had already scheduled the surgery for September 19, but I had to do MRI. And that this day was so stressful. You know, MRI.
Sure.
Yes. And I had to go like facing down. Mm-hmm. And I started panicking inside of the machine. I asked the lady to take me out and she said, well, so you're gonna need to come back another day, take a pill or something like that. And I was like, no, I don't want to come back. And she said, well, I can see if the other hospital has a bigger machine. And while she was trying to reach the other hospital, I was just like praying and ask God to help me. And I was looking to the machine and I was saying, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. But then finally I said, okay, I'm going to do it. I told her and I entered the machine with my eyes closed all the time. And with the tip of my fingers, I was touching the exit on the top. So I knew that there is an exit. Yes. And I was like just thinking about other things. I'm very active in my church. So I was thinking about the camping that I was organizing and all this stuff. And I started getting calm. Then they gave me the contrast and then it gave me panic again, but I maintained calm. Okay, I was done. I went home. And this day I was feeling so tired, so overwhelmed that I sat on the floor close to my husband's. He was sitting in front of his computer, so close to my husband's chair. And I look at him and I said, I am tired. I am so tired. I'm exhausted. And at this time, I started crying. Then I cried like crazy. I went to my bed and I cried. I don't know how long I cried, but I cried like strongly. I think that it was like the tip of the iceberg, mm-hmm. you know? So I was crying for me. I was crying for my sister. I had a very good friend of mine. She was actually my boss. And she was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2011. And there was stage 4. So she had a metastasy on her spine. And I was her nanny this time. I was taking care of her 2 children. The boy, I started taking care of him when he was 2 months old. And I took care of him until 4 years old and a half. And they moved to Texas, and she was fighting over cancer. So she was my inspiration, sure. you know. So the good news for me is that because of the early stage, I could do the lumpectomy. Mm-hmm. And my lumpectomy was so fast. I was in the hospital 7 a.m. They still had to do some mammograms. I almost passed out by this time.
I can imagine.
It's horrible. And then I went to the surgery, and like 11:30, I was back home.
It was fast.
It was very fast. And then after that, I started radiation. I had only 16 sessions. My sister had like more than 30 sessions of radiation.
The stage was 3.
Yes, yes. So the doctor said that my cancer was non-invasive, but if it grew, could be very dangerous because it was the most aggressive type of cancer.
They can tell by the biopsy what kind of...
They can. I did a genetic test because my sister and I, we both diagnosed like this problem, but in the same time, like, but was everything negative, and she was just my half sister. Mm-hmm. And, but still, I still had the pregnancy thing.
In your head?
Yes. So my doctor said, well, you need to start in tamoxifen. Because your cancer is 100% estrogen. Mm. But because you wanted to get pregnant, you cannot take the medicine right now. So I took my chance. I took my chance, and for 1.5 years, I tried to get pregnant. I did 4 IUIs and 2 IVFs. Nothing worked. Then one doctor, he said, well, I can treat you, but if I was your brother and as a doctor, I would say just give up because you have only 1% of chance. So that's when I decided that I was not going to try anymore. And then my doctor was saying, well, you need to start a tamoxifen. Because it's too dangerous for you.
And this medication you were supposed to take for the cancer.
Because when we have cancer, we have to take this medication for 5 years minimum. Okay. And now they think that is best for 10 years. So I don't know. If my doctor is gonna ask me to continue taking after 5 years, I was supposed to be done right now, but because I stayed like 1.5 years trying to get pregnant, I'm kind of late, but I'm still taking, and I don't know. One thing that I realized that God was so good for me, that even I suffer because I didn't get pregnant. If I did, the cancer could come back. Because it was 100% estrogen. When you get pregnant, your hormones level, estrogen goes up.
Sure.
And my friend, my boss, ex-boss, she was always say, don't do it, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant. She was also worried about this. So I see that, you know, that was good for me because it was saving my life. And probably if I had a child, probably the child would be without a mother. I don't know.
You think it could be that serious?
It could be that serious because of the type of the cancer. Because it was very aggressive. My sister also started taking the medicine, but 1 year later, her cancer came back. Almost in the same place, the same breast. So she decided to do a double mastectomy. So she did a double mastectomy. She put an implant. She had this implant infected 2 times.
Oh, wow.
She had like 7 or 8 surgeries in 2 years.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. But she's strong now.
And she has blood support as well.
Yes. Yes. So when we talk about survivor, I was last month I was doing my mammogram and my ultrasound, and I was talking to the nurse and the technician actually, and I say, you know, I don't feel that I'm a survivor because I didn't go through all the stuff, all the chemo. I didn't lose my hair. When we think about cancer, the first image that, for me at least, is all the treatment, chemotherapy, losing your hair, getting weak. And I saw this with my sister, you know. So I was feeling like a fake survivor.
Interesting. Well, I think you are lucky because they were able to catch it at such an early stage. And you didn't have to go through all those stages that your sister did or other women.
Yes.
You are definitely lucky. And mm-hmm. I believe in diagnostics in the United States, meaning how advanced it is. And you are the perfect example how soon they were able to help mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
But you are a survivor because when you think about it, psychological thing.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's even worse.
Yeah, and it's funny, the technician said, well, but you are a survivor.
You are.
She said, you have the big C word in your life.
Definitely.
So she said, don't think that you're not a survivor just because you didn't go through everything. And I said, well, I'm grateful that I didn't go, but I was like, am I a survivor, really?
You are. Psychologically, even the example with MRI that you described, it's a lot to go through.
It is.
I will throw my personal example. This summer, it was the first time I did my mammogram. Mm. And I tell you, this is the hell of the experience. It was a lot. And I will never forget the day when I got a call from the lab, mm-hmm. not actually, it wasn't the lab that was calling, it was the scheduling department. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine, you pick up the phone and they tell you, this is the scheduling department of that and that hospital, and we need to schedule extra diagnostics.
Oh.
And in your head, you think, what is going on there?
Yes.
And when you ask questions to a scheduler, of course, what do you hear? She says, I'm sorry, I cannot give you any result because I'm mm-hmm. not qualified for this. My job is to schedule. Mm-hmm. And Northwestern has a great feature. Maybe other hospitals and systems do the same, but at least my experience with Northwestern, I was able, the scheduler actually offered this option to schedule a call with a nurse. She asked me, if you have so many questions, would you like to talk to the nurse and schedule a call? I said, absolutely. I want to know what's going on. We scheduled a call. They called me pretty quick, less than an hour later. And I was able to talk to the nurse, and she explained that they did see some dark areas. They just need extra diagnostics, extra testing, just to make sure. And another thing, when it's the first time mammogram, they don't have anything to compare with. That's why they want to do extra testing. But can you imagine in your head, this game is going on. Oh my gosh, what if they find something? What am I going to do? The life is over.
Yeah.
It's just a mammogram, but I will never forget how I was sitting downtown Chicago at the coffee shop after I was done with my MRI and after mammogram.
Mammogram,
yeah. After mammogram, they said, okay, we need to test you more. So they sent me to the ultrasound exam. And I was literally looking at the screen like I understand something. And because nobody actually explains anything to you. It just, you go from one room to another room. Wait, and intimidation is there. And I will never forget the day I was sitting downtown Chicago at the coffee shop. I was texting my mom. I was texting my friend. And my life has changed. My life has changed. And I thought everything was good. They didn't find anything. Testing showed good result. But psychological aspect. What you have to go through. It was just unbelievable.
And I need to tell you that still many times it comes to my mind that if the cancer comes back one day, I will die from cancer. I don't think about this, but it sometimes just comes. And I think probably by the time that I go to, now I do my mammogram and I have to do the ultrasound also every time, every year. So I did last month and I said, I was like, if he's back, I'm going to die this time. And I try not to think, but still it comes to my mind. And I told someone, I told a friend, I think like, I told this, like, I think that if you, one day it will come back, I will die from this. So, yes, psychological is so much. Oh, it's horrible. Last Sunday, I went to an event on the Northwest Community Hospital for, I took the picture there. And I was listening to some people talking about the experience, and it made me cry. I'm like, why am I crying? You know, but it brought memory, brought the stress, you know, to my memory. And I after I talked to the person who now was doing the speech, and I hugged her and I just started crying.
You are a survivor.
Yeah, it's a lot to go through. And my former boss, she passed away last year.
Sorry to hear that.
Yes, but she was like fighting cancer, metastatic cancer, you know, in her spine. For 8 years.
That's a lot to deal with.
8 years. And these 8 years, she did 2 Avon walk.
For cancer?
For cancer. 2 Avon walk. She was doing everything she could. She was being like a guinea pig for the hospital, the MD Anderson Hospital in Houston. And she was a fighter, she was an inspiration. And even today, when I talk about her, I
got choking.
Yes. She left a 12 years old boy and an 8 years old girl. But she prepared their kids for everything. They were, of course, ready, no. But she did very well with the kids. And she did everything that she could to live her life with her kid and to make presence in their lives. And so that's what we need to do. And I think everyone, every woman, you know, should take charge of her life, their life, and check. Because if it was not because of my sister, I was not going to do the mammogram at all. And I was not going to feel anything in a self-exam because it was early stage. And probably if later on, I could have a stage like, you know, 2, 3, or, and I don't know what could happen. So it's important to check. And if, and like we see in our profession, if you have history in family, you need to check before 40. You don't have to wait to be 40 years old if you have history in your family of cancer, especially breast cancer. Then we talk about breast cancer.
Right. And that's why you did the genetic exam.
Yes. So, yeah, just you. They need to check early because of my sister. She was 51 years old and she could now lose her life because of this.
Yeah. So what is the biggest learning experience from going through this situation you've got?
My biggest experience is that take care of yourself. Life is short, as everyone says. Enjoy your life with your loved ones and trust in God. And that's it, everything now. You do trust in God, you do for you and you do for your family, you do for your now your friends. And don't take life for granted, because we take life for granted for so many reasons. And it's not like this. When you have an illness like this, you stop and you think like, wow, I thought I would live forever. I thought I would never have cancer, because it can happen with anyone else, but not me. And not true.
Absolutely. And did you have this thought? And I know you said that you didn't think it's real when you were diagnosed, but later on it got up, right?
Yes.
And
yes,
you got a little bit emotional. Did you think, why me? Why I got this disease? Did you have this thought?
Yes, I did. But I was trying not to think too much because I was not going to get the answer. So I was trying to get in control, everything in control, you know, like not to get desperate, you know, And but yeah, the question came to my mind. Yes,
you are a very religious and spiritual person, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you asked God, why did you send me this?
Yeah, well, the question was not why did you send me this, but why did you allow this to happen?
Interesting.
Yes.
So in your mind, you thought that you did everything in front of Jesus, in front of God, that you shouldn't get this. And then you question, why? What did I do wrong that you allowed this?
Yeah. But the way that I take my religious life, my relationship with God, is that it's not like being punished. I don't think that God will punish us with such a horrible thing. Okay, He allows some things that happens, but we don't know the reason why. So what I did, it was just like, I decided just to trust God. And they said, there's something, there's a reason. And if I die, okay, I will die trusting that God had a reason for allowing this to happen to me. And I know that God has plans for me that are better than my own plans.
Interesting.
And so that's the way that I always, you know, think. I live now thinking about this, and always now looking and searching for God and talking to God and trusting in His will to my life. Because sometimes you don't have the control. You just, you know, you ask, but you don't have the answer, like loudly. So try not to get desperate. Go after help. Do whatever you need to do. And I was trying to make sense, like, okay, I did the genetic test. It's negative. I don't remember anyone in my family with breast cancer from my father's side. And then I started now thinking, like, maybe the environment, the food that I eat, all these, you know, hormones and food and all this stuff. So I maybe it's this, because it's just me and my sister with this problem here in the United States. My the rest of my family is in Brazil and they don't have this problem. Sure. Yeah, so I was thinking, like, maybe it's this, no food, environment, or something like this outside. But you know, Anna, I had only one cousin that had died from cancer on my father's side, but he died from thyroid cancer. Mm-hmm. But after we had cancer, another cousin got cancer on her bladder and she died from cancer. And her sister got breast cancer. Thank God she's a survivor. And this sister, this cousin that got breast cancer, her son got cancer in the neck. And like suddenly everyone, like a lot of people from my father's side started having cancer and said, well, I don't know about the genetic test, but we know that they don't test everything.
Impossible. Yeah.
Impossible. But it's funny because after us, it started this thing like cancer, cancer, cancer. But we see every day, every day, every, you know, it's every, you know, like years ago, if you hear someone, oh, someone has cancer, oh my God, now everything, now it's getting like normal.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes, this is a very, you know, severe illness, but so many people are, you know, getting cancer, that is kind of becoming a common disease.
Yeah, it is. I see this trend, and I was watching a program the other day, and one of the ideas was that cancer is a business,
unfortunately. Yeah.
Do you remember? And I'm sure you did a lot of investigation and you read about cure, about therapy, about medication, mm-hmm. how to cure mm-hmm. cancer. And there are some ways to cure cancer. It just, for whatever reason, they don't make it public. They prefer to do radiotherapy, mm-hmm. photon therapy is a new thing, all these kinds of things, but not to cure.
Yes, yes. And like you said, it's a business. Unfortunately, it's a lot of money involved.
Totally.
And because I did some research. I watched videos and said, oh, you know, we can cure cancer, that they just don't want to do it. So, yeah. And then people are just, you know, getting sick, and a lot of are dying from this, and just because it's a business.
Yeah. So you touched on some of the reasons why you think yourself and your sister got cancer. The part of it is the food, the part of it is environment. So did you find a firm and clear explanation why people get cancer?
No. Well, I believe that, let's say 50%, I believe that is what we are eating. Okay, what, unfortunately, I have a bad habit of now loving sugar, and I know that sugar is very bad, and I'm trying so hard to, you know, take care of my health and forget sugar, because I know sugar is, it can feed cancer cells.
Exactly. That's what
yes is. So I believe that like 50% it's food, environmental. Yeah, it has your percentage this. And the rest, I don't know, maybe, you know, family history, things like this. But unfortunately, you don't have the answer. When my sister was diagnosed, they started now talking about natural treatment. And she said she decided to do like things natural, but also do the, you know, regular treatment. And I think that helped a lot, because, you know, God gave this, the talent to man, you know, the intelligence and everything to help the, you know, the person that is next to you. So I believe in the regular treatments. I believe in chemo. I believe in radiation, the surgery, you know, everything's fine. But also I believe that we need to change our lifestyle. We need to go after a more natural lifestyle, diet. It's too much, canned food, too much like industry, you know, food.
Yeah.
And all this stuff that they put inside of the food just to preserve for a long time, you don't know what's going there.
Exactly.
So what I'm trying now is to eat more like real food, you know.
And what is real food?
It's just like cooking your own food.
So you do cook?
I do cook.
I remember your cheese bread.
Oh, yes. My famous cheese bread.
You do your famous cheese bread, yes.
Yes, Yes, I do cook, you know. And as a Brazilian, we like rice, beans, you know.
I didn't know that.
Oh, no, Brazil. The main dish is rice, beans, a piece of meat, any kind of meat, and a salad with just leaves, like lettuce and tomato. That's it. Brazil is such a huge country. And it feels like many countries inside of one country. If you go to the Northeast, it's something else. It's different. Let's say 80% of of the population there are African descendant.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we eat a lot food that has African,
base.
Yes. Yes, acarajé, vatapá, a lot of plates that you can only find in Bahia.
Well, one day, probably I should visit the place and remember our conversation.
Yes, yes, for sure. And if you one day you decide to go to Salvador, just let me know. I will teach you how to eat this kind of food.
Okay, I need a special workshop on how to eat
kind of. So like, if you don't like spice, don't let them say this. If they say this, you know, they kind of tricky.
That's true when they say, if you want to travel to a country, it's better to travel with a person from that country. Well, first yes. of all, that person knows the traditions, and the second of all, the person speaks the language.
Yes. For sure.
So how is that living clean, be clear from the disease? How's that psychologically, physically? Do you feel more freedom, or you're still having that thought on the back of your mind?
Like I said, I'm still trying eating clean. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I have my doubts about, you know, even if we buy the food with all these pesticides and everything, you know, like sometimes I see, oh, this is organic. And I look at it like, it's really organic. They didn't put anything on this. You sure?
Are you sure? Because it looks so perfect and clean, right?
You're like, yeah, can I just now put it, now pass on water and eat, and I'm not being worried about any product inside of this? Because it's not the vegetable. Let's talk about the vegetable. It's not the vegetable. Just like the outside, but the inside, the ground, that also gets all the toxic products.
That's a good point. I didn't think about it, but it's a good point you're making, right?
Yes, because the vegetable, the fruit, they're getting all the nutrients from the ground, and the ground, if it has the product, is going inside of the food.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I didn't think about it.
Yeah. So, I think that is a good option to go and try to eat a more like I said, real food. You know, cook your own food. Try to live more natural as possible, but. Like I said, I'm not sure if everything is really clean right now in this, in 2019, let's say. Maybe, on the, 19 and something at the beginning of 1900s. Yes. So, unless you plant your own food.
I would like to add one more thing you are doing, and I probably will remember this forever too, when you came up in the kitchen to me in the office and you said, Anna, I want to run. When we were talking about another run in the company.
Yes.
And, I was listening to you as you were talking, and you made me happy. You made me happy. And
I know.
Confidence, you were talking about it. And I felt that you made this decision and you want to make it happen. And sure enough, 3 years ago, first chocolate race, 5K. Yes. And I remember you wanted to, because it was a special year, 10-year
yes.
year anniversary, and you wanted to get a special keychain.
Yes.
Then after the race, you found out that they don't give it to the 5K runners. You were quite upset.
Yes.
It didn't discourage you to do it the second year.
Yeah.
And you did 15K. How was that?
Yes, because of the medal.
You see? Such a small thing. So big motivated.
Yes. Almost died last year. Really? No, it was, oh my goodness, I can't, when I remember last year, it was tough. My sciatic started hurting on the first mile. And I was, you know, it took me like, it took me like 2 hours and 40 minutes, I think, to get to the finish line. When I got the finish line, almost everyone was gone. They were just like putting down everything, like, oh my goodness. And I was like, where is my medal? I want my medal. It was
like, nothing else matters. I want my medal.
Yes. I cried on the mile 8. I cried. I was so tired. I had so much pain. I was all wet because it rained. I was wet. I had blisters on my foot. And my husband called me, and he was running also, but he just left me alone. He ran. And I was behind. He left me behind. So he called me, and I said, I don't know if I can make it. And I was like a mile 8, and said, oh no, it's almost done. When finished, I started crying, and I cried, and I cried. And then I started feeling like short of breath. And I said, okay, calm down, calm down. You're not going to pass out here.
In the rain.
In the rain, yes. It was so cold and wet. And I started. Funny thing is that every time I would see someone with the camera for the run, I started running like I was doing great. On the finish line, I have my picture running with the V.
You made it.
I made it. So I told her, I was telling everyone, like, oh, I'm not going to run this year. And now I'm not. Another 15K, it's not going to happen. And then my friend said, oh, no. What about the 5K? We were like, but they don't give a medal on the 5K. And they said, oh, they are going to give this year. Like, really? So I went to the website. When I saw the medal, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go on the 5K.
So you're doing 5K this year.
I'm doing 5K, and I'm going to get the 3 years medal.
We're all going to get 3 years special medal with the Chicago flag. That is exciting. And guess what? That's my motivator. I want the medal with the Chicago flag.
I know, right? That's so nice.
I think that this is kind of our tradition. We've been doing it for 3 years.
For 3 years, yes.
And it's pretty interesting.
It's good. Yeah, I'm glad that I started, because I told you it was in my bucket list.
Yes, you did. I remember that.
It was, and I was always, the doctors always said, because of my back problem, that I couldn't run. And that year I said, I don't care. I'm running. Well, I run, I walk, and I walk. And I
Yeah, that's the
I
best.
I finish.
Yeah, that's the best way. And that's what matters. You want to finish. You want this accomplishment, right?
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you come the first or the second or the 10th. I think for me, when I run to participate and to have this challenge for myself, that's mm-hmm. what matters.
Yes, yes. Just be able to finish. It's a big accomplishment, and it's good for now ourselves.
Yeah. So what do you think? Maybe next year, Chicago Marathon?
Oh, no. Don't do that. I'm going to continue with the 5Ks for now.
All right. Maybe a couple of years, 5K, and then we will think about marathon.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this in a couple of years, okay? Let's see. But it was good. And Maria was great. Now, she would come to my house to walk with me, to run with me.
That's wonderful. She was helping you.
She was helping me a lot. She was giving me a lot of tips, and it was great.
Yeah, she was a great runner.
Yes.
So if you think of any advice you would give to the women out there and what you went through with the disease, mm-hmm. what kind of advice would you give to the girls, women, mothers, grandmothers?
Mm-hmm. Like I said before, don't take life for granted, you know, and take care of yourself. Do all the exams, the tests that you need to do to be done, because of what I had because of my early stage, I was able to go only to surgery and radiation. I didn't have to go to the nightmare of chemotherapy. So, my chance of survival were greater, you know. So, do your breast exam, you know, monthly, and go for mammogram when you now have your 40 years old. And if you have a lot of people in your family having this problem, if you're not 40 years old, go talk to your doctor. Go and share your concern, and listen to your doctor, and do whatever you need to do to keep health and help others.
In what way?
And advising, say, just saying, look, did you do this? Oh, I'm afraid. Oh, I don't have time. You know, just said, no, this is important. You know, this is your life. Just all kind of opening the eyes of, your friends and family, women, because we're talking about breast cancer. And don't be afraid to go and find out, because as soon as you find out, much better. You have the chance, your chance is much, greater to go through and survive. And take care of your health, go eat real food, forget all this sugar thing that I still need to work on it.
It's a work in progress.
It's work in progress, yes, yes. It's one day at a time. So yeah, that's it. And trust in God, have faith, because like we talked before, it's a lot to take, especially psychology, in your mind. And that when you have faith in God, when you have, your religion, this gives you some comfort. This because a lot of times you cannot do anything. You just have to trust your doctor. You just have to trust the treatment. And if any woman is going through chemo now, remember, take a lot of water, a lot of liquid. you know. My sister, she only could eat watermelon. She would eat like 2 big watermelon in 3 days. That's the only thing that she could keep on her stomach. And it was good because of watermelon is liquid, a lot of liquid, and would take the medicine for the chemo out of her system, you know. But yeah, that's my advice. Take care of yourself and of your family. Open the eyes of your family and go do research. Read a lot, you know. Watch a lot of documentaries that are good to help you to learn things.
Educate yourself more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think these are very good points that you brought up. And one of them, when you were talking about not delaying the diagnostics, the testing, I recall that conversation with a lady, and I don't remember specifics, but somehow breast cancer came up in the conversation, and she mentioned her mammogram, that she doesn't want to do it because she was scared, what if they find something?
Mm-hmm. And it was something that I was kind of trying to delay, remember?
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest fears in women. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it because I'm afraid.
If, yeah.
What if they find something? What am I going to do with this?
Yes, yes.
And another thing, when you were talking about religious support, believing in God, finding that faith and pray, I think support of the family and people around you is also
yes important. Oh yes, very, very important. It's I have my husband here and my sister, my brother-in-law, but my church family, they were very important in this time of our life. My sister and I, they were shocked, they cried with us when they got the news. They literally cried. It was when the pastor told them about my sister's cancer, it was a shock. And then 2 months later, I was, you know, diagnosed with cancer, another shock. And they were just very supportive, praying all the time, talking, taking care, visiting after surgery, you know. And this is, so it was like my real family here with me, because of course my husband was with me. My sister couldn't take care of me because she was dealing with cancer also, you know. So it's very important to have a support. If your family is not here, have friends around that give you this support, because emotionally it's very tough, very tough.
That's why you are a survivor.
Amen.
Yes, you are. And thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you, Anna.
Absolutely. Like I said, I didn't have any hope when I asked you a question, but it's a beautiful story and I admire you. And I didn't know many things, but what I've learned is that's very inspirational.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And I hope I can help with, you know, this story for other women. And I appreciate you too.